It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Everyday Americans are standing up to thank President Trump.
Thank you so much,
for
sir.
Making America great again.
Thank you for cutting my taxes.
Thank you for fixing our economy.
Thank you for keeping my family safe.
Thank you for putting America first.
Thank you for supporting Israel.
As veterans, thank you for reminding us to stand for our national anthem.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you, President Trump, for letting us say Merry Christmas again.
All right, well, that was an ad that ran on Vox and Friends this morning. It's produced by America First, and refreshing, because I do think that when we lay out the accomplishments of what this president has done, it is pretty remarkable, in spite of the naysayers, the Trump haters on his team and not on his team. It was amazing yesterday when they were celebrating the passage of the tax bill. Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah, who, by the way, the president is trying to persuade him not to step down from his Senate seat so that Mitt Romney wants to run. And Mitt Romney's a never-Trumper out in Utah. Well, he wants to run in Utah. He doesn't live in Utah. I don't think any. I don't know where he lives. He has lots of homes. But Orrin Hatch kind of put the ribbon on the package yesterday at the end of the mini statements, and I thought you might want to hear it. Here it is.
You're one heck of a leader, and we're going to make this the greatest presidency that we've seen. Not only in generations, but maybe ever.
Isn't that something? I mean, to have Orrin Hatch say that? Well, that's pretty stunning. And, of course, no one can deny it was a great victory, the passage of the tax bill, except the left. They can deny it. In fact, here's the headline this morning. Trump celebrates tax cut. Media predicts doom for Republicans. And it goes through and itemizes what Jim Acosta said. But keep in mind, this is a celebration that is being held by only half of Washington. This tax bill attracted zero support from Democrats, and it goes on to talk about it's going to make the wealthy richer and the poor poorer, and the same things they say over and over again. Chuck Todd joined in, too. He said, what are you celebrating? He's asking this question. So the media is not celebrating because, you know, we know whose side they're on. But it really was a very good thing. I want Peter Ducey to kind of explain the bottom line on it. Here he is.
The yeas are 224 and the nays are 201. The motion is adopted.
For the second day in a row, the House passed once in a generation tax reform. The House had to vote again because the Senate passed a different version of the tax bill when Democrats demanded certain provisions get yanked out to comply with upper chamber rules.
Look, we would have preferred that there not be any glitches in the system. Sometimes that happens, but we pitched the glitch and we move forward and, you know, we have an outstanding bill for the American people.
The Speaker of the House didn't let the do-over dampen his feeling about his end of the year win.
It was a very emotional time because I used to be, Jack Kemp was my mentor and I've been working on this issue pretty much my adult life.
Even though the tax bill already cleared both houses of Congress, Democrats continued trying to turn constituents against it.
So what we're doing here today is basically saying, wealthy Americans, big fat Christmas present for you. Tiny Tim, we're taking your crutch away from you and all the other kids in this country, and we're putting a lump of coal into your Christmas stocking.
Doesn't that sound kind of silly? Is that not so over the top that I find myself wondering, even those of you that are not supporters of the president, maybe you're Democrats, doesn't that just kind of like they're out of substance? They have to come up with all these metaphors that are just, in fact, silly. There's no truth to what they're saying. But Peter Ducey goes on to talk about something else I want to underscore, because we talked to Congressman David Bratt yesterday. And you have to understand that these guys on the front lines are putting in so many hours. They really are now. And they deserve our praise and thank you because they just spent hours and hours and hours and hours trying to get a tax bill through this Congress. And now they have to go into fighting the budget battles. It looks like it's going to, you know, the short-term CR is going to expire tomorrow night at midnight. So now they have to go right back in to fighting over this. It looks like they'll do a short-term CR. And then in January, as Congressman Brett said to us, we are in trouble in the sense that we know that Mitch McConnell and others are planning on slipping in DACA, thanks to Jeff Flake, who's retiring, thanks to Paul Ryan, who may be stepping down. We don't know, but rumor has it that he might be, and he loves passing Amnesty and Dreamers Act. He loves that. They're both committed to it. And so it looks like Mitch McConnell has agreed in part. That's what we're hearing from behind the scenes. So Congressman Brett begged us yesterday for our support, and surely we will give it for all the reasons that I talk about when I have more time. We'll get back to that later. I want to bring something else to your attention. We got some good news just in the last couple of days here. Alliance Defending Freedom is announcing that a court says that the policies violated First Amendment freedoms for the former fire chief. Remember Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, who wrote a book on marriage, that the value of marriage and why it should be between a man and a woman? He was the fire chief. He wrote it on his own time. He was a Bible study teacher in his church, as I recall. Didn't do this in his work time, and yet he was fired. Remember that? Well, they've now decided that was unconstitutional. I don't know what his future is, but that was a long time ago, and he lost his job and was, you know, really held by disdain by many, many people because of simply of defending marriage between one man and one woman. And then tied to that, I got an email from Jonathan just this week, and he says, thank you for everything you do. He said, I work for the Air Force, and last week everybody at our base was sent an email about the transgender policy from OPM, that's the Office of Personnel Management, and males can use the female restrooms and showers if they notify their supervisors they are, quote, unquote, transitioning. They don't have to even have surgery. And he sent us the whole policy that was just issued, and Jonathan, thank you for doing that, because I'm passing that on to people that can do something about that. But the reason I mentioned those two stories is because there is someone responsible for a lot of that. There's one person you could say was driving all of that, the persecution of people who believe marriage should be between one man and one woman, and the changes in the military. And it's a name that's kind of maybe familiar to you, but probably not, because most of you are kind of new to this game. It's a woman named Chai Feldblum. And now Chai's been on the radar screen for those of us that are conservatives in this movement for a long, long time, because she is the most radical advocate of LGBT policy. She was the head of the campaign for military service, which way back in 1993 was pushing to allow gay soldiers and military personnel to be in the military and all other things. She was way ahead of her time. As a matter of fact, she signed on to a policy piece. Let's see if I can just read the exact words. She signed on to a policy piece that was advocating polygamy. She's way beyond the range of normal in her terms of her understanding. She was way ahead of her time, shall we say. And she was placed on the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission by Barack Obama. It was Chai Feldblum who pushed all of his radical policies, wrote them, implemented them, and made sure they took place. Now, here's the kicker. The Trump administration, the people on his team out of the White House are pushing to have Chai Feldblum renominated to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And my understanding, let me just read this from a person that I know who has a lot of knowledge about this. I said, folks don't understand how important this is. I think they think the EEOC is just a minor agency they don't need to worry about. No. The EEOC is the leading edge of the racial, gender, and now transsexual preference quota programs that infest the government, academia, and private industry in employment, contracting, college admissions. It is essential that we have individuals there who not only understand that, but are willing to fight to the end in the face of vicious attacks from the media and the left. And so you say, why would the Trump administration nominate someone like this? Well, let me just tell you that it's kind of a bargain that someone in the White House has made. Someone in the White House has a wife that wants to be part of this commission. So what they're trying to do, and they're working behind the scenes, and I understand Chai has chuckled about how to get this past the Republicans without them knowing. They have manufactured a situation where they want to vote on all three nominees at once. Two of them are Republicans, and the other's Chai Feldblum. And so they want to do it like as a, like this is the package. Vote on this package. And when you vote on this package, look, you'll get two Republicans, just one Democrat. So what's the big deal? So that's the thinking of the office in the White House who are, my mother would not like it if she heard me say this word, but I'm going to say stupidly promoting Chai Feldblum, the most radical leftist LGBT person in the country who knows exactly what to do and how to do it. She's a graduate of Harvard. She taught at Georgetown Law. She's a very brilliant woman. She's radical beyond measure and appointed by Barack Obama. We can't let this happen. Honestly, Christian Adams has an article about this we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can have more detail than I'm able to give you right now. It's called Radical, he called it Radical LGBT Activist Chai Feldblum, renominated to EEOC. All right, so here's the update on this. There are senators, now I don't know who, but I know that there are senators who are putting a hold on this nomination. But the problem is, if they put a hold on her nomination, they reject the other two Republicans as well. So we're not sure if Mitch McConnell is going to insist on keeping them as a bundle. I think they have to be accepted as a bundle because they came out of what's called the HELP Committee. Oh, I know it's confusing. But the Senate HELP Committee, who has people on it like Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, who are, you know, not so worried about this. A bad committee, and it passed out of that committee. And now it looks like it will go to the floor. So we think that two. We think that some senators are promising to put a hold on this, but I think it would be wise. I think it would be really wise if you can today call your Senate office and tell them absolutely, absolutely no Chai Feldblum. No way. No way. This administration, the Trump administration, who's been the champion really for Christian conservatives, there's no way that his administration, under his nose, without him probably having any idea, because how can he track all of this stuff, are pushing someone as radical as Chai Feldblum to be on the EEOC. It will have terrible repercussions for all of us. I heard it by another insider say, Chai Feldblum is worth three Republicans. She will work circles around them. They have no idea what they're up against. And I think Christian makes the point in his article, which I find to be true, that people in Washington do not understand the dangers of the left. They don't understand how devious. They don't know how determined. They don't understand down to layers how dangerous it is. They just are clueless. They think they're so smart, but about this, they are very dumb. The other part of this is coming out of the White House legal office. One of the Republicans that they're hoping to get on this committee is the wife of one of the people in that office. So it's pretty, it's a cozy deal for somebody, but it's not a cozy deal for Americans. And so I would encourage you to call your senator today, and you can use this Christian's article that we will put on our Facebook page so that you'll have some, you know, some information. Actually, Paul Mirigoff also wrote one. We'll put that on too so you can have two articles. Social conservatives rally against Chai Feldblum's nomination. And so Paul adds his touch to it and adds more information. So that aren't with those bits of information. Always be polite when you call, respectful, but emphatic. Is there something wrong? You know, be angry and sin not. You know, that little motive. Those of you that are followers of Jesus, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So let's do that. I have so much to tell you today, but you know, the one story we have not discussed this week that I've been saving because I've asked Claire Lopez to join us this morning. Claire knows all about the connection between Iran and Hezbollah and the attempt, the successful, I wouldn't say attempt, the successful undermining of the investigation of Hezbollah and its drug running, its extortion to fund radical Islam and also terrorists. So using American money to pay for terrorists here in this country and overseas, and the Obama administration shut down the investigation. It is such a stunning story, and I've been saving it so that we could talk about it for at least a whole segment. So please stay tuned. Claire Lopez will join us next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, here's some great news, and we could all use some great news for 2018. If you're worried about your healthcare costs or you feel like you're missing out because open enrollment is over, well, it's not too late to join MediShare. You can sign up anytime, and think about this. The typical savings for a family with MediShare is about $500 a month. Think what a difference that would make to your budget. Again, that $500 a month is the typical savings. It could be more or less for you. Definitely worth taking a couple minutes to find out. There are over 300,000 MediShare members sharing each other's medical bills, and something they're now loving, MediShare has a telehealth program that lets you log in and meet with a doctor in real time within the comfort of your own home. For everything from a cold or flu or for a prescription, you can save a lot of time and money, and it's free. Again, open enrollment might be over, but you can still join MediShare. Here's the number to find out more. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association. An example of the increasing attack on Christian values in our nation is openly homosexual billionaire Tim Gill, who has spent $500 million promoting the LGBT movement and has vowed to, quote, punish the wicked, end quote, who oppose that movement. And by the wicked, Mr. Gill means Christians like you and me.
For more than 40 years, the American Family Association, by God's grace and with your help, has stood against the rising tide of moral decay in our society. As you consider a year-end gift to AFA, we'd like to send you a copy of the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks. This video reminds us of the truth of the Bible. It's our prayer that God will work through the God who speaks to restore the faith of Christians and churches that have grown to doubt the trustworthiness of Scripture. And it's our way of saying thank you for your generous year-end donation.
You can give at afa.net. Thank you very much.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Wednesday was one for the history books, the first major tax overhaul since 1986, the day when Republicans voted to look out for the middle class, the American working man, the day when they put thousands of dollars back into our bank accounts. It was Republicans, not Democrats, Republicans who stood up for the American people. And as Senator Orrin Hatch so eloquently said, it would not have happened without President Trump. You know, it's easy to get pulled into the mainstream media narrative that the Trump White House is in shambles, but that's just not true. President Trump has been pushing policies and advancing a conservative agenda with great financial success. AT&T just announced every worker gets a $1,000 bonus. Home sales are exploding. The stock market is about to roar. This is what winning looks like. This is what making America great again looks like. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
The United States, together with our allies and partners, has reached a historic understanding with Iran.
At what cost was the nuclear deal with Iran reached? A Politico investigation alleges the Obama administration, in an effort to reach the agreement, drastically curtailed efforts to interdict cocaine shipments into the U.S. by Hezbollah, a terrorist organization closely allied with Iran. For years, it has been known that Hezbollah had been active in the Latin American drug trade. In 2016, a DEA official told a congressional panel that Operation Cassandra, a massive law enforcement effort to stop the Hezbollah drug trade, was inexplicably curtailed.
For some unknown reason, we seem to have missed out on one opportunity after another. We seem to have forgotten
about the importance of disrupting the supply chain.
Politico reports, quote, when Project Cassandra leaders sought approval for some significant investigations, prosecutions, arrests, and financial sanctions, officials at the Justice and Treasury Departments delayed, hindered, or rejected their requests.
There clearly is a huge pattern here. I mean, we pull out of Iraq largely because the Iranians want us out of there. And President Obama has no political and moral commitment to an Iraqi end state that's in the United States' interest. From 2009 January to the entire 8 years of the Obama administration, hands off anything to do with the Iranians and their proxies.
Several former Obama administration officials did not respond to our request for comment. A spokesman for Mr. Obama told Politico the administration was hard on Hezbollah, quote, through tough sanctions and law enforcement actions.
The Trump administration has taken an entirely different tack in its Iran policy. That course change reflected in some sober comments from Secretary Mattis here on Friday to reporters when he told them, quote, everywhere you find turmoil, you find Iran's hand in it.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. We've spent a great deal of time talking about what we believe is corruption in the FBI, corruption in the Justice Department under Eric Holder and Barack Obama, and some of the appointees that are still there that we're fighting. This story, though, rivals that story. It's amazing to me now how whistleblowers, I don't know if you call them that now because the Obama administration is not in power, but coming out now to tell about the things that happened, it's really breathtaking. And that was Doug McElwey's first report on that this week. I think it was 2 days ago. I've been kind of saving it because I wanted to talk to Claire about this. Claire Lopez is with the Center for Security Policy. And believe me, this is right down her lane. She knows all about this. There's no one better to discuss this with us this morning than Claire. So, Claire, thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm going to give an overview first, and then we'll go into the details. But, Claire, this report from Politico was very extensive, very detailed. And I recall, it seems to me that you recognize maybe some of your own work in there. You go around the country and brief various entities about this, don't you?
I do. I've had the great privilege of working with John Guandolo and Chris Gaubet at Understanding the Threat, a group that trains and teaches primarily local law enforcement, sheriff's departments, police departments around the country on the national security threat. Broadly, including, of course, the threat from the Islamic movement. We teach about Islamic law, Sharia, jihad, the Muslim Brotherhood. But one of the segments, the training blocks, if you will, is the part that I was describing to them about the role of Hezbollah really as a transnational criminal organization, because that's what it is. In addition to being harnessed to the broader jihad, because, of course, Hezbollah is a total proxy, wholly owned subsidiary of the jihad regime in Tehran, and answerable up a chain of command that goes through the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and Quds Force and intelligence service of Iran to the supreme leader there, Ali Khamenei. But here in the Western Hemisphere, Iran and Hezbollah both got a foothold quite a long time ago, decades ago, and expanded that over time in ways that really have been in the open source arena. And it's from there that I gathered information to bring in to the attention of the law enforcement classes that we taught.
But Claire, did you have any idea until this story broke in Politico that the Obama administration had gone to such great lengths to shut down and destroy the investigation by the Drug Enforcement Agency and other agencies into what Hezbollah was actually doing in this country? Did you know anything about that?
No, not to that extent. I knew that there were cases that were actually brought and prosecuted. I knew that people were actually being arrested. That is all true. They were. They were arrested, indicted, charged, tried, and went to jail on many of these operations that were broken up, including the Cassandra case, Operation Titan, the cigarette smuggling case, the used car operations ring. But no, what I did not know is the extent of the suppression of cases like these and the activities of Hezbollah even further, being shut down. The operations by DEA or FBI, other law enforcement against them, the extent to which they were frustrated in their ability to pursue it even more aggressively. No, that is the political story, really.
All right, let me go back and ask you to repeat something and just a little differently. Hezbollah, you know, it's a proxy for Iran, and I would say most people, sane people would say Iran is probably our greatest ideological enemy. They're the ones that paid for the IEDs while our guys were fighting in Iraq. They are responsible for so many, our wounded warriors. Thank you, Iran. And so Hezbollah, explain to us more clearly, if you can, Claire, in terms we can understand what Hezbollah is actually doing.
Well, first of all, I always pronounce it and spell it Hezbollah, H-I-Z-B-A-L-L-A, because taken apart, that means party of God, party of Allah, Hezbollah. And it's important to understand that is its ideological doctrinal root. It was formed in southern Lebanon among Shiite population in the early 1980s by Iran. It was answerable to Iran then and remains so today. It is a tool of Iran. It is Lebanese and Shiite in its origin, yes. And the way that it got to the Western Hemisphere is that during the 1975-1990 Lebanese Civil War, many, many Lebanese fled the country and went many other places, but including especially down to South America, where that is how Hezbollah seeded that flow of Lebanese leaving the country, seeded that flow with its own operatives at the direction of Iran, and found a foothold, first of all, in what we call the tri-border area of South America. That's a place where Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay come together in their borders, but it's very poorly policed, if you will. All kinds of criminality has gone on there long before Hezbollah even arrived, but certainly afterwards, including car theft and contraband dealing, narcotics trafficking, weapons dealing, all sorts of things. Hezbollah found it a perfect environment to gain a foothold, and so it did. But then Iran expanded its own presence throughout Latin America, especially during the time 2005 till 2013, when Hugo Chavez was president of Venezuela and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was president of Iran, and they formed a close personal relationship and expanded a relationship between the two countries, especially at a time when Iran was under some tough sanctions. Venezuela helped them evade those sanctions, establish more footholds, diplomatically speaking. Because think, every time Iran opens a new embassy or consulate or Islamic center, mosque for that matter, those are places where they put their operatives from the IRGC, Quds Force and Intelligence Service, undercover inside those places. And those are the people who manage the liaison relationship with Hezbollah on the ground. So that's how the presence expanded. And then there was a natural affinity to the drug trade originating out of Colombia. And again, especially at a time when Iran was strapped for funds, more and more difficult for them to support Hezbollah, perhaps as they would have or had done in the past. And Hezbollah turned to find other ways of finding income. Criminality and narco-trafficking were the top ones.
So, Claire, would you say, is it fair to say then that Hezbollah is the operation that funds and supplies the terrorist organizations, or are is that their primary job, or are they also fighters?
Hezbollah is all of the above. Hezbollah is, of course, as I said, a direct terror Islamic Jihad proxy of Iran. And by the way, the other thing that they got away with and that makes them so overwhelmingly confident in getting away with anything else they choose to do, they being Iran and Hezbollah, is 9/11. We know that, and so does our president and every president before him, President Obama and President Bush, that Iran and Hezbollah were deeply involved in the planning, the direction, the operations of 9/11. They got away with that attack on our soil, killing Americans on our soil, and nobody to this day has ever held them to account. Is it any wonder they feel a sense of impunity? But so Hezbollah is all of that. It is a terror organization. It's a criminal organization. It's a narco-trafficking organization. And by the way, Hezbollah has cells, operational cells, all over the United States, too. Some of it deals in narco-trafficking. Some of it deals in criminality. Before, I mentioned cigarette smuggling, car theft ring operations, and all kinds of other criminality, including trafficking of methamphetamines, like the Captagon pill that keeps fighters in the Middle East pepped up and ready to go for, you know, days on end. Contraband-like knockoff purses or blue jeans, that sort of thing. All kinds of criminality, but not the trafficking at the top of that. The biggest income earner for Hezbollah, or had been during the hard sanction years, and that is going on right inside the United States. But the other thing they're doing inside the United States with those operational cells, that, by the way, the reason we know those are there is because senior U.S. officials have testified in open session before Congress that they are operational inside the United States. That's how we know that. The other thing they're doing, though, is pre-attack casing and surveillance, not just of American targets, but also of Israeli ones, Israeli embassy and consulate, and the diplomats themselves. That's what Hezbollah is doing in America.
All right, so Claire, if you were to trace a timeline, you talk about, I think so you're saying that it came, they first started getting involved in South America, Central America, and now they've moved here and there are lots of cells. So how far were those cells in existence before 9/11? Then they must have been.
Yes, although those cells were not themselves particularly involved in 9/11 to the best of my knowledge. Hezbollah's involvement in 9/11 had more to do with training and escorting the 9/11 hijackers and recruiting them. And the 9/11 Commission report itself, go to have a look at pages 260 to 261, depict a senior Hezbollah operative. That would be Imad Mafia, although his name's not there. That's who it is. He was the one who actually was the terror chief of Hezbollah for decades. But he went to Saudi Arabia in 2000, the year 2000, to actually recruit some of the Muslim hijackers there. That's wow. In the 9/11 Commission report. Then he helped escort them around the Middle East on their various training missions and operational briefings prior to 9/11. That's Hezbollah's role, the recruitment and the training of the 9/11 hijackers. Nobody will talk about this. It's literally in the 9/11 Commission report, as well as the report that I was part of. I was an expert witness for a legal case called the Havlish case. That name, Havlish, is the name of one of the widows of one of the pilots from 9/11, and she and others came to a group of legal firms to investigate 9/11 because they had no confidence the United States government would do a proper job of it, and so we did, and we put together a very strong case, presented it to Judge George Daniels of the Southern District of New York in Manhattan, and he concluded and ruled in the case December of 2011 that Iran and Hezbollah were co-responsible with Al-Qaeda for the attacks of 9/11.
Wow.
The district court judge, federal court, and he later levied a huge financial penalty against Iran, which of course goes unpaid.
Wow. Claire Lopez is my guest with the Center for Security Policy. We're just getting started because we haven't actually come now into the Obama era. And what we're learning now about what President Obama and Eric Holder in the Justice Department did to our American forces, I say forces, I mean entities, Drug Enforcement Agency, FBI, to stop them from investigating Hezbollah. It is breathtaking. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. 40 days of twice daily taunting from Goliath sent Saul and the Israelite army reeling in fear. But David's passion for Yahweh, conviction, and full persuasion stirred King Saul. When people are on fire for God, it often provokes others to glob onto that fire. But we must be careful to resist the well-meaning overtures of the flameless bystanders. Saul meant well, but his armor couldn't help. It would only slow David down.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Hi, this is David Barton of Wallbuilders Live, inviting you to join me here on American Family Radio this weekend. We take the ideas of the Founding Fathers and apply those ideas to the major issues of the day. Our guests include those who are in the headlines, as well as experts on issues facing this great nation. Along the way, you'll discover the role that faith has played in our nation's history, as well as in dealing with the issues we face right now. Join us Saturday afternoon at 2 Central here on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our spiritual heritage tours fill up each year several months in advance, and we've got the dates now for our 2018 trips. There are two tours. There's one to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, and then there's a separate trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, where we'll explore early American history. Now, if you want information on these tours, simply go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information. Again, in June and September, you can go on one or you can go on both. They're back to back. We plan them that way. Again, June and September, Washington, D.C., and Williamsburg. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com, and I hope to see you on one of our spiritual heritage tours.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, the United Nations will demonstrate the behavior that has long reduced it to a playpen for totalitarians, tyrants, and terrorists. The UN General Assembly will vote overwhelmingly to condemn President Trump's decision to recognize that Israel's capital is Jerusalem, relocating our embassy there. As Ambassador Nikki Haley declared in vetoing a similar condemnation in the Security Council, this was a sovereign U.S. decision. Its critics nonetheless seek to induce as many nations as possible to demonstrate their solidarity with America's jihadist enemies and those of the Jewish state. President Trump has rightly signaled that there will be costs for choosing to be against us rather than with us. He should start with the Palestinian Authority, which has, over the years, received billions in U.S. taxpayer underwritten aid. Ditto the UN, and especially its corrupt welfare agency that enables the Palestinian victimhood narrative. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Exalted, 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 shall be exalted.
Sandy Rios back with you. When I hear the lyrics to that, that's Messiah, the Soul of Celebration, I'm encouraged. I know that's kind of old English, but it basically means there will be justice. Every valley shall be exalted. In other words, all the low places will be brought up. The mountains will be made low. That God will bring justice to all of the things that we're talking about. It's a prophecy and promise out of the Old Testament. Two things that just came to my attention that I want to mention quickly. Devin Nunez, behind closed doors, and of course it's being reported by Politico because they can't wait to report these things. They are investigating the corruption, the perceived corruption, the DOJ and the FBI. There's a group of members of the House that are doing that. They're not necessarily, well, I'm sure they're not, they're absolutely not members of the leadership. They're doing this on the side. I'm sure it will bear some fruit at some point. Also, Attorney General Sessions has ordered a preliminary investigation into the Uranium One scandal. I remember that scandal with selling 20% of our uranium supply to the Russians under the leadership and oversight of Hillary Clinton. There's more to the story, but that's amazing. So I just wanted to tell you that. But back to our discussion with Claire Lopez of the Center for Security Policy. The latest horrendous thing that happened under Barack Obama was this. Let me just read to you just a portion from the Washington Examiner account of the way the Obama administration refused to prosecute Hezbollah as their operations in this country and actually shut down the investigation. It was called Project Cassandra. And David Asher, who was a Defense Department illicit finance analyst, said this. They serially, meaning the Obama administration, serially ripped apart this entire effort that was very well supported and resourced, and it was done from the top down. He said the closer the U.S. got to making a deal with Iran involving its nuclear weapons program, the more the investigations into Hezbollah went away. So much of the capability, whether it was special operations, whether it was law enforcement, whether it was Treasury, even the capacity the personnel assigned to the mission, it was assiduously drained almost to the last drop by the end of the Obama administration. Claire, I just set that up, so I would love for you to just fill in the blanks, your thoughts when you heard that.
Well, it certainly rang true. You know, as I said, a lot of what I know and what many others have known about Hezbollah operations in the Western Hemisphere, United States, the criminality, the involvement in narco-trafficking, came to light in the open-source world when investigations and arrests and prosecutions took place. But what we didn't realize until now is the extent to which, behind the scenes, those cases were being suppressed. So a certain amount came to light and alerted us to what Hezbollah was up to, what it was doing. But what we didn't realize is how badly awry and off the tracks the effort against them had gone. And really, this is in keeping, again, excuse me, with what I just said about 9/11. There was absolutely no willingness whatsoever on the part of President Bush, President Obama, and so far not this administration either, to hold Iran and Hezbollah accountable for what they did to us on 9/11. And in the Obama effort to get through this horrific, misbegotten nuclear deal called the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, it now appears that they were willing to suppress everything and anything that Iran and Hezbollah had ever done to the United States and to the American people. you know, mass-scale murder, mass-scale criminality, trafficking of drugs, cocaine and other things, methamphetamines, for example. To just look the other way and let that all happen so they could have a misbegotten deal that, by the way, the deal itself does nothing except pave the way for an Iranian-deployed nuclear weapons program, because, of course, it doesn't even address where the real program is, which is the clandestine nuclear weapons program that Iran has always had. That's another story, another deal.
Right.
But to get that, they were willing to overlook anything that the Iranians and Hezbollah were doing to America.
Yeah, and
that's what's so wrong.
I know it's amazing. And you think of I think of the Corker Cardin Senator Corker and Ben Cardin expedited this deal We know now, I think pretty much Americans know, that it was a terrible deal for us. A deal is not even worthy. It was a bargain made at the expense of the safety of Americans for the benefit of Iran. And that brings us to a headline that's making news now. This is something you've been tracking for a long time, and that's it ties, this will help people understand how egregious. And that is the story of these two brothers. They were the IT so-called specialists in the House of Representatives, Imran and Abid Awan. What is the tie for their, really, espionage in the House of Representatives and the Hezbollah and the Iranians? Hezbollah.
Well, I don't know for a fact that there is a connection yet. What's been surfaced is the fact that these two brothers had a connection to an Iraqi with connections himself to Hezbollah that loaned them a great deal of money. That's what we know. More specifically, I think what we have learned over these last months about the operation, and again, this is about two Pakistani brothers in the IT field who were working on Capitol Hill in various congressional committees and in offices on computer systems to which they not only had enormous access, but then hacked into additional access, stole equipment, and it is now believed, at enormous salaries. These are 20-something-year-old kids. Excuse me. Making $160,000 apiece, which is way beyond what anybody else in their situation is paid. But the suspicion now, and hopefully the investigation, is focusing on their potential connections to Pakistani intelligence, because I think that's where that operation goes. There could be a Hezbollah connection, given there's this one individual with whom they were affiliated, as well as the circumstance that the brothers ran some kind of a used car operation, which again is one of the ways that Hezbollah was making tons of money in the United States previous to that operation being shut down. But I don't know for a fact yet that there's a connection between the Pakistani operation on Capitol Hill and what we're talking about with Hezbollah.
You know, one of the common themes that I picked up from the story about that investigation, it was reported there were 50 FBI agents tracking the Awan brothers. And the quote is from, a prosecutor said, right now we have 50 FBI agents not doing anything because they know that their Iran cases aren't going anywhere. And so so another part, at least, of the Iran story being shut down. And this is what really struck, well, one of the things that struck me in this political story. By the way, we'll put this political story on our Facebook page. It's the secret backstory of how Obama let Hezbollah off the hook. And John Brennan was the one who led all of this. And he said, actually, Claire, you may probably know this, not that you should remember every single detail, he said, I'm not sure what year he said this, but the next president has the opportunity to set a new course for relations between the two countries, meaning Iran, though through not only a direct dialogue, but greater assimilation of Hezbollah into Lebanon's political system. And then he said later, Hezbollah is a very interesting organization, Brennan told a Washington conference, saying it had evolved from purely a terrorist organization to a militia, and ultimately a political party with representatives in the Lebanese parliament and cabinet. Your comments on that, Claire?
It is just mind-bogglingly stupefying that the former National Security Advisor, later CIA Director for President Obama, does not understand or prefers to lead the American people astray on what he does understand about Hezbollah. Hezbollah, again, as we said before, is a wholly owned subsidiary terror jihad proxy of Tehran. It was formed in southern Lebanon in the early 80s precisely to project power and influence by the Iranian regime, which we'll remember had just taken power in the revolution of 1979. And it grew from those origins rooted in the Shiite community and among Shiite Islamic clerics of southern Lebanon who had connections to Iranian Shiite clergy. That's part of how that works, and to Iraq, Iraqi clergy. From there, grew into a full-fledged terror operation. Let's remember, and this too is in the 9/11 Commission report, in 1990, the Muslim Brotherhood president of Sudan, Umar al-Bashir, invited jihadis of the world to come to Khartoum to have what I have always called a jihad jamboree. In those years, after the war in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri were in exile. They had found safe haven in Sudan. Bashir invites all the rest to come there and meet up. Who comes? In addition to the PLO, PFLP, and other jihadis, the entire top level of the Iranian government came to Khartoum. So did the top leadership of Hezbollah, including the aforementioned Emad Mughniyeh. There, the alliance was formed between, among Hezbollah, Iran, and Al-Qaeda.
And John Brennan cannot be...
And that the time when Al-Qaeda essentially hired Hezbollah to train its operatives in doing big truck suicide building, suicide bombing.
So John Brennan, John and Brennan, Claire, we only have two minutes left. I would imagine that the former CIA director has full knowledge of what you just told us. I want to bring this to another headline. Bruce Orr is the gentleman with the Justice Department who is under, the spotlight is turned on him. His wife is a Russian expert. That's a whole other issue. But Bruce Orr had two titles at the DOJ, and one of them was Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Forces. And I'm assuming, Claire, that they would, look, we know that Hezbollah smuggled millions of dollars of heroin into this country, oversaw so much crime against Americans, and on with all the money they stole and took and made with heroin and all the other criminal enterprises, they funded terrorism while our government looked the other way. And I'm wondering what you think about Orr's connection. If he was the head of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task, would he not have been overseeing the shutdown of this or the squelching of the DEA looking into Hezbollah?
He would at least have had to know about it. Whether he was actively participating in the squelching, I don't know. But he certainly would have had to know that things were being slow rolled, even as, like you said, tons of cocaine and other drugs were flowing into this country, because Hezbollah, by the way, hooked up with the Mexican drug cartels. That's how they found channels into this country and all the way on up into Canada, too. He would have had to have known about that at a very minimum and did not speak up.
Well, it's an incredible story, the whole thing. And as we're talking here, Claire, I'm just thinking, you know, there are so many never-Trumpers, so many people that hate him, the media hates him. But Hillary Clinton, if she had been elected, would have continued all of this stuff and a whole lot more. I just want to put this in perspective. And so at least we have the hope of some fresh air and light shown on this stuff. And God willing, you know, we can bring justice to some of these people that undermine their own country, including Barack Obama and Eric Holder. Claire Lopez, it's always a pleasure to have your expertise. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and have a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you, Sandy. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Yeah, same to you. All righty, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.